The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks, everyone. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my excellent co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I will harvest your world.
Nice.
Wait, and, that I sounded more like Bane doing Eddie Redmayne from Ascendant.
Well, like Bane with, you know, after his testosterone levels drop kind of low.
Yeah, if he was an immortal, you
know,
I guess.
You know, Mark, you're the only guy I know who does impressions two levels deep. You impersonated Eddie Redmayne doing Bane.
You know, if Bane was a eunuch and he was doing his impression of Eddie Redmayne, that's what that sounded like.
I was going to harvest your planet, but Bane spoke to me, and I will not do it now.
I couldn't tell if that was Bane doing Redmayne or Redmayne doing Bane at first until you...
I was going to get into that, but my brain kind of exploded, so...
All right, and the other person you're listening to right now is our other co-host, John Levingood. Say hi, everyone.
Hi, from your much saner co-host, not doing Bane impressions.
Right, you're just sticking with Eddie Redmayne.
I'm not doing any impressions. I'm not doing anything.
Oh, you know you're doing your Eddie, John.
Like right this second, this is my Eddie.
I mean, it's a really good Eddie Redmayne impersonation.
Levingood, I feel like it's...
So John's been gone for a little bit. I just wanted to catch the audience up on what John Levingood has been up to. He was in Thailand, and he was one of the judges for the International Unofficial Squat Lifting Competition.
Okay. So to our listeners who don't understand that, I probably can't go 12 hours without posting something on Facebook about squatting.
Nothing against that. I think it's great, but... So, I mean, tell me about this competition, the Thailand Unofficial Official Championship Squat Rack Championship. Well, you were judging, yes? So, I mean, were you pulling like a full-on kumite where you're just sitting there nodding your head? I mean, were you in there? Were you testing weights?
Kumite.
I just sit there looking very sullen most of the time. I'm not supposed to react like, you know, old school feudal Asian lord kind of thing. But, I mean, the favorite in the competition was actually Sagat from Street Fighter II. He's tall. He's got to move the weight a really good distance, but we really were favoring him in that. But then, you know, one of those Chinese powerlifters just came in and stole the show.
Didn't he just blow a knee out halfway through? Didn't it just explode? and it hit the judge to your left, right?
Well, you know, most of the YouTube videos suggest that they blow out something else. It's like blowing a flat tire, but it's not as graceful as a tire.
I wonder why like illegal martial arts competitions all take place in Thailand. What is it about Thailand that just attracts like all these?
Because it doesn't matter what the law books say in Thailand. Everything is legal for $10 in Thailand.
Yeah, I bet the food was amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean the vendors. I was out there for the illegal knife fight. Illegal knife fight competitions. Yeah. I mean, the spread was amazing out there.
Literally.
And so the knife fight competitions. So half of the cast of the 1979 Warriors were there at the knife fighting competition.
It was intriguing. And so, John, while you've been away, I just want to let you know about one thing that we talked about. Lazarevath and I came up with a sequel to Psycho that features Norman Bates and his mom going to a tropical island with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
Where they have to battle a fisherman and they have to deal with Jack Black, Stoner, Rastafarian, and it all ends on a jet ski chase where Norman Bates drives into the side of a tanker and that tanker explodes.
So I know what that furious psycho did last summer, man.
That's a tagline.
Yeah.
That could be the title right there. I think I nailed it all.
I love it.
Well, all right. Bringing it back to Thailand, that's a weird thing to say on this podcast. But well, speaking of Thailand, that might be a better segue. We have a reader question, actually.
Speaking of Thailand, what is the question?
the unofficial weightlifting competition.
It's a reader named Bangkok Dangerous, which is in Thailand.
Is right? It Nick Cage's alias?
Ooh.
Oh. Ooh. All right. Bangkok Dangerous asks, what movie features the most realistic weightlifting? Levengood, you picked a great podcast to come back to.
I mean, when I think of movies, all I can think about is weightlifting, to be honest. I can think of like four good scenes. So
really?
I don't know.
Even like a movie like Shakespeare in Love, you can point out like the best weightlifting scenes.
I mean, you got to wear the costumes. Not. You got to wear those costumes on stage. It gets pretty intricate. So your caps are probably pretty boss.
I mean, okay. So let me start with a few. I got a few of them. All right. We'll briefly go through them. So Pain and Gain. All right. We all remember Pain and Gain. The Rock is in that warehouse where just outside of it, he's grilling hands when he's starting to crack out. Then he starts using drugs again. And when he's all coked up, he does close grip incline bench press with 275 like most people do 135. Very, very impressive weightlifting. We all remember this scene?
Yes.
I mean, that was pretty solid. We just saw The Rock flat out really working out. And I think those were legit weights.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, I think he does that. You know, when he's not filming, right?
He was doing that to pump up between scenes. They're like, let's just put the camera on him.
He's doing that right now, probably.
It's like it.
While meanwhile, listening to this.
Yeah, so I got American Sniper. Now, I'm not going to call this one the best weightlifting scenes, but it raised a lot of brows. And now online, all over the place, people are talking about the American Sniper workout because Bradley Cooper put on 37 pounds for this role. It's a little hyped up, though, because if you look at the photos of him before, clearly out of that 37 pounds, at least 15 or 20 pounds of that was fat. So he got kind of burly. But he was doing half reps for the height of his knees with 455 pounds with a farmer grip deadlift.
So are you telling me that Bane was his personal coach?
Bane probably was his personal coach, but Bane could do full reps. He wouldn't have to go from the knee height.
Copy that.
Like, but, you know, that was in that scene, though, he insisted on using real weights. And so that was actually kind of cool about the movie. I just wish he was taking it from the ground myself.
I don't know. I know they weren't supposed to be totally realistic, but what was your opinion on the Rocky training montages?
Well, I mean, those pull-ups were obviously legit, but everything else is questionable at best. I mean, I want to know that they're really doing it in the movie.
I mean, the running montages, they're basically just going about 5 feet, then stopping. Like, run 5 feet, stop, jump up in the air, do all that. But let me tell you something. The most curls that have been ever done in cinematic history was an Anchorman.
That's right. How many was it?
I know he ended up at about 1,007.
When Christina Applegate walked in.
And those were legit isolated curls. He had his elbow on his knee. He isolated it. He went all the way down to the extensions. Ron Burgundy did over 1,000 curls.
Wow.
Well, I don't know exactly how much weight it comes out to and if it was really happening in the movie, but Arnold Schwarzenegger in Twins, he deadlifts a car.
Yeah,
remember that?
Right.
The alarm's going off and Danny DeVito's trying to hotwire the thing and he just deadlifts it. Danny DeVito comes out. He's like, oh my God, look at what you just hit. He says, I know, isn't it fantastic? If you lift it up, it throws off the weight distribution. Yeah. It thinks it's being towed and it goes off. And like, that's why he was excited, because of the science. And Danny DeVito's this little like pococito tiny thing and he's freaking out over it. That was a pretty fun scene, man. Like...
Well, I think this question has been fully answered. Right,
wait, you're talking about Bangkok Dangerous. I just watched that film Joe by David Gordon Green and Nicolas Cage, and I really liked it. It's not a reconnaissance like Matthew McConaughey had, but Nick Cage actually proves he could still act. And in Joe, he was like real construction worker strong. I saw a movie with him in the past where he looked cut, but I thought it was all CGI. But in this film, if you get into a bar fight with him, you're not walking out of there. He got pretty grizzled. So I got to give him some props for that role.
But like, he didn't look like Tom Hardy in Warrior Jacked. He was a different kind of big.
yeah, he was, I work outside knocking down trees and carrying around packs all day. And he's always he's always fist fighting and getting shot and beating up people and running around like a maniac. And I mean, sure, with all that manic energy burning he has, it probably keeps him in good shape.
So, yeah, like, after these movies come out, right, you got like Tom Hardy's Warrior workout probably on Men's Health and Fitness and stuff, and it's in a lot of deadlifting. And then you got Bradley Cooper's American Sniper workout, and it's got a lot of deadlifting and stuff, right? Then the Nick Cage thing, it's got like a big pile of bales of hay. It just says move them over there.
Yeah.
And then like the second set, okay, move them all back.
And then drink a beer walking back to it. Like, so on your first rep, you have to drink a beer. Your second rep, you have to smoke a cigarette. Your third rep, you have to drink a beer.
And then your last time, they let a 180-pound hog out, and you have to go wrangle it with your bare hands. Like, you just bear hug that thing and take it to the ground, grapple it.
Those are some practical muscles.
Nice. Well, guys, I'm feeling pretty pumped, actually. Oh, hey-o. Bowl of them tonight. All right, we have another question from Old Lady Anaconda Def.
Wow. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I wonder what led to that handle.
Right. So, OLAD ask.
That almost sounds like Old Lady.
I'm assuming it's a she. What is Sean Bean's best moment not involving him getting killed?
All right, so I know we're spending a lot of time here on the questions, and so I'm just going to give you my favorite. I could go for hours about this. I could add the Hitcher in there when he takes out four cop cars and a helicopter, but there's a scene.
Oh, that was good.
In Fellowship of the Ring, where they're in the Mines of Moria, and Billy Boyd just knocked down that skeleton, and all the goblins came running at them, and they're cornered in that room. Sean Bean runs out to close the door to keep all the trolls from running in. And as he is, these two arrows fly right by his head. He dodges the arrows. And then I think he looks at the guys who shot the arrows with annoyance. And then he shot, like, he wasn't even worried about dying. He was just like, I'm going to get you two. Like, it was just, he was annoyed that two arrows were shot at him. Then he turns around and he lets out that classic line, they got a cave troll. I just thought, I just love that little character beat of how he looked annoyed.
You know, when he says the cave troll, it's almost like how you described him looking at the people who shot the arrow, because he just sounds more annoyed than scared. They have a cave troll.
Yeah. Like, he's not scared. Yeah, you're right. He's just annoyed by the whole situation. And I like that about him. He's kind of been there, done that.
It's like, I knew we shouldn't have come in here. I knew they were going to have a cave troll. But did you guys listen? No. And now we have to deal with the cave troll. Good job. Right.
So for me, his best non-death scene is every single moment of Game of Thrones except for the moment where he gets killed.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Oh, the books have been out for years. Everyone knows it by now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think he has a great character introduction where he beheads the watcher on the wall. What do you call them? The black shirts?
The men of the Night's Watch.
Yeah, the men of the Night. He takes one of the guy deserts, so he cuts his head off. It's just like, it sets a good precedent for him. You understand him as a character. He's loyal. He's honest. He sticks to the plan, but he gets his hands dirty. And I thought that was a great character introduction that showed you instead of told you.
Yeah. And then he, you know, pulls a Sean Bean, gets himself killed.
He pulls a Sean Bean. Yeah, he got killed in a pretty epic way. So non-spoiler alert, I guess, whatever.
Well, he'll never be the head of a major corporation, that's for sure.
Oh. That one kind of hurt, Mark.
Boom.
Oh, all right.
Try the veal.
Try the veal.
Nice. All right. Well, that does it for reader questions. Lemongood, to kind of celebrate your return to the podcast, I figure it'd be appropriate to basically talk about an article you just posted on moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Care to talk about it?
Sure, yeah. It's 15 images for 15 years of horror. It's a part one because Mark later did a follow-up article. But mine is some of the greatest, goriest, most shocking, and most memorable defining moments in horror since the year 2000.
Well, let me interrupt you real quick, Levengood. For those of you who don't know, John Levengood here is the horror czar, or is it horror leviathan?
Or whatever. You know, we started calling John the horror czar in the past. And we did so because I just had this visual of John sitting in a massive chair in a dark Edgar Allan Poe house, He has a monocle in his eye.
There's a
wasn't
raven
I,
sitting
wasn't
on
I
his
drinking
shoulder.
Old Rasputin?
Yep, old Rasputin stout in a sifter, and he's watching Martyrs, the scene where the skin gets flayed over and over with a single tear rolling from his eye.
So basically, but, when Lemongood does a horror article, it carries more weight than your average horror piece.
Oh, absolutely.
Basically. I mean, more weight purely in rubber guts and like cherry maraschino cherry blood.
Well, that sounds delicious.
But we later found out, or I realized that there was another guy who has a website, and he's called the Horror Czar. Maybe he just called himself that. I don't know. But he's been around for longer than I have in the blogosphere, so felt right to not use that name. So if he's listening, Horror Czar, we weren't trying to steal anything.
Well, I'm trying to push this, but John's not a fan. But I like Horror Leviathan because I just get this image of him surfing, watching a horror movie while holding a portable DVD player. With a monocle. A monocle, you know, the scuba masks, but he only has one eye covered to see out of.
And he's got the raven sitting on his shoulder still.
Yeah.
So, like, the really hardcore horror fans out there, when you start talking about this with the monocle and the Horror Leviathan, they're probably going to think of Hellraiser 2 Hellbound.
That's what's playing on the portable DVD player.
That's what's playing on there. Because the bad guy was technically Leviathan. He was like the beast of hell in the movie, and he was weird looking. He had this big tube kind of coming out of the top of his head like some tentacle thing.
Could you drop stuff into it if it's a tube?
Oh, man.
It's not like a beer bong. It's not like that. It's
He wasn't just
funneling things into his head.
This is going to sound random, John, but I actually met John Levengood back in the day playing tennis. But for some reason, when you talked about a demon from hell with a tube on his head, I just thought about putting tennis balls in it.
Like feeding them out, like so you can practice your forearm in hell, your forehand in hell.
And I booked Leviathan for an hour on Thursday. Make sure he shows up, please.
That's right. Make sure the Leviathan is oiled. I don't want that thing getting jammed again.
But your tennis racket is always your it's always busted though for some reason. McEnroe plays before you, and he's always busting the thing up.
So I have this post about 15 images for 15 years. I didn't necessarily pick one image per year, but I picked a lot of good memorable moments, and they had to be moments that were easily conveyed by a single image. So a lot of movies didn't make it just for that reason. Session 9, bless its heart, couldn't make it, and there's no one good image that really conveys anything crazy in that movie. You need whole scenes for it.
The article is also posted on the website, Movies, Films, and Flicks, if you guys want to follow along.
Hey, John, can you please spell it correctly for me? Because I've been spelling it without the and.
So that's Movies, Films, and Flicks. Movies, Films, and Flicks, F-L-I-X. And we are spelling out and. Movies, Films, and Flicks with an X.
None of that amateurish ampersand stuff. Get out of here. We're spelling out the word.
That's right. So the post is up now, and the first one that I chose was actually from the movie The Taking of Deborah Logan, which is a movie that took a lot of people off guard. This kind of independent film, there wasn't a lot of advertisement for it before it came out, and it just turned out to be awesome. Credible characters, great acting from this soap opera actress playing this senescing, demented woman, Deborah Logan. And speaking of demented, in one scene on the website, you can see it. She is actually swallowing like Ranger Rick Discovery Channel snake swallow or egg swallowing snake. She is swallowing a whole child's head. And so that picture, when I saw this movie, I just froze. I mean, if she was there in front of me, she could have eaten my head. I would have just been paralyzed.
Now,
I couldn't have done it.
Does good old Debbie Logan, does she just want to eat the child head, or she have ambitions for the whole body?
So, good question, Mark. In the mania of this scene, I couldn't really extrapolate the motivation of eating the head, nor did it seem to be explained in the movie. But I just knew that she wanted that kid, and evidently consuming the child's soul was done head first.
I'm looking at this picture right now. It's pretty graphic in a not too graphic way. And I just I have no idea what's going on.
Hey, let me tell you something else about this. Like, loud noises aside, quick camera angles aside, this scene, you could have it on mute watching the movie, and it is terrifying when you see this. They're in a cave. They shine the flashlight over. Boom! Deborah Logan is swallowing a kid's head. Terrifying.
I mean, is she just going to stay on the head and, like, slowly back away? If she eats the whole thing, she probably has to rest for a couple hours.
Like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of the child's head?
You know what's funny is that, like, you have to think of this like a cartoon, because if she were to eat the whole thing, once she gets down past the neck, her own feet have to come off the ground for leverage. So, like, she is then doing a handstand above the child and slowly lowering down over the child.
All right, so I got a question for you guys. The first picture on my list, the part two, was from the terrible film Dracula 2000. And the only reason I included this moment in picture was because when you're first introduced to Gerard Butler's Dracula, he has a massive curly-haired hair helmet. And I've never been able to shake that visual for my life. So do you think good old – was it Deborah Logan? What's her name?
Deborah Logan. Yeah.
Is it Deborah Logan?
Deborah Logan?
Oh, I was going to – I don't know. I call her Tina Logan. Would she be able to absorb Gerard Butler's hair helmet?
I don't know if she can unhinge her jaw that wide. That's a lot of hair. It's like he had Jerry curl in the coffin with him that whole time.
I don't think she could even digest it. Like, it was just like – it would just pass straight through, like, undisturbed.
Well, don't they say if you swallow gum, it's in there for, like, 7 years? What would this hair helmet be?
You know
be
what it is? It's just like the egg-eating snake. After it crushes the egg inside, it then expels the egg fragment. What happens is she'll eat Gerard Butler, and then she'll just expel this wig. Like, it's like a big hairball, but it's Gerard Butler's hair.
I think I can safely say no one's ever compared Gerard Butler's hair to a snake egg before.
Maybe it would come out looking more like one of those owl pellets. Oh. With the little rat bones and the rat hair in it.
That probably describes Gerard Butler's hair very accurately.
Okay, so moving on from that colorful metaphor. Next, I chose Oculus, and the image that I chose was Katie Sackhoff, who plays the mother. We see her through the mirror when her daughter is looking in, and she sees her mother reaching out to give her a hug. And all I can think when I see this is, no, 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 no. I don't care if it's your lovely long-dead mother who's so happy to see you and take you in her warm embrace. Those outreached arms are breaking the reflective barrier of a mirror. That's not right, and that is always, always, always evil. Do not hug. Hard no. Hard pass on the hug.
So I'm flipping through the horror guidelines right now, the official horror unofficial horror guidelines from Taiwan, Thailand.
Thailand.
And it says here.
It was made in Taiwan, but they sell in Thailand.
If someone reaches their hands out of a mirror to hug you, it will not end well. See Appendix 3-6.
You know what? That's actually right after the rule that it says, when someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
Hey, quick question is
from Ghostbusters.
Is that the addition of Gerard Butler on the cover?
It is. It's the I have the 2006 version, and it has his hair helmet. It's just his hair, though.
Okay. Yeah, I have the same one.
But either way, I think that was hands down the best evil mirror movie out there on the market. So if you're looking for an evil mirror movie, Oculus, best bang for your buck.
Yeah, I figured those evil mirror movie fans of they've been hurting for a while. So I'm glad they got something.
I'm gonna go
you know, people kept complaining that they should just break the mirror, but of course it wasn't so easy to break. But if Jason was there, I'll bet Jason could have broken that mirror.
I'm actually looking. So the second photo that I have is from Jason X, which is an abysmal movie about Jason going to space. But there's a scene in there where they're trying to slow Jason down. So they introduce him to these two female co-eds.
And it's a hallucinatory terrain.
Yeah. And so they walk up. Yeah, they walk up to Jason, or Jason walks up to them, and the two women go, do you want a beer? Do you want to smoke some pot? Do you want to have a little premarital sex? Then they hunker down in their sleeping bags, and you cut back to these people watching the screen. They're like, oh, it's working. This is going great. And then they cut back to Jason with one of the sleeping bags, slamming one of the sleeping bags on top of the other sleeping bag. And then he finishes off by hitting one of those sleeping bags into a tree. And it's a terrible movie, but I've never been able to shake that movie because that moment, because it was just so funny and weird. And it does not belong in that film. The most... Hey, wait, so who would win? The mirror in Oculus or Jason from Jason X?
I think that the mirror would just show Jason in his, like, little drowned, like, disfigured form, and Jason would just crumble.
Yeah, Jason is a mutter's boy, so...
Yeah.
He's kind of a pansy.
I mean, you just see Mama Voorhees holding out her arms to give him a hug, and he just going for the hug, and you don't do that.
Oculus mirror 1, Jason 0.
Bringing it back to Jason X real quick, the most memorable part of that movie for me was when they're on the spaceship, there's a breach in the hole, and they're all getting sucked out into space, and one of the characters, a girl, she says like the worst line ever in cinema history. She goes, as she's getting sucked out, "This sucks on so many levels."
Oh, terrible line.
Oh,
terrible.
I loved it. I loved it.
Like that,
I might have to watch this movie again because it seems very self-aware.
Self-aware and how crappy it was. No. It's a fun movie. Whatever.
All right. Well, now let's wind it back a little farther. We're going to take it back to 2013 for me. And for me, it's The Conjuring, which I thought felt like an instant classic, like all the contemporary advantages from good actors and production value and good screenplay writing. Still had loud noises, but they were justified with the scares behind them. But instant classic feeling movie. And this movie was filled with creepy, creepy imagery, and it just kind of snuck up on you sometimes. And the image that I show with the hanging feet of the dead witch behind Patrick Wilson was one of those scenes that just took me off my feet.
And you were right.
Oh, I see what you did.
Oh, it took me off my feet.
Because the witch is hanging, and you just see her feet hanging.
Yeah, is that a piece of veal in your hand right now, John?
No.
I know you love protein, but John's eating some veal right now. He has a glob of pasta in one hand and a glob of veal in his other, and he's just there's a drummer behind him going boom.
This is not true.
Hey, Steve, how you been? The drumming sounds good. All right. So, what I liked about The Conjuring was you were right. They were very, very good actors in this film, and what I liked most were the Warrens. With Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga was they didn't have to be there. They were just there out of the goodness of their hearts trying to help. And they were like, it just, in a lot of movies, people put themselves in terrible situations. They don't have to be there, blah, blah, blah. These people put themselves on the line and wrecked a lot of their lives to make the world a better place. And for some reason that really connected with me. And plus there was a lot of loud noises.
Yeah.
But it justified loud noises.
Yeah. The Conjuring should also be mentioned. It was made by the same people who made Insidious and I think also the Saw movies.
James Wan did Saw, the first Saw.
Right. Dead Silence.
Yeah.
Dead Silence. What a great, nothing but jump scares and creepy imagery, but a great, great, great job of it. Super fun movie.
Yeah. So The Conjuring is basically kind of along the same vein as those movies, and it's very effective.
It's like Dead Silence, which he made farther back along with Saw. So Saw was just, let's shock the hell out of everybody. And Dead Silence was, let's just have a good teenage scare. Whereas this is kind of like the grown up mature horror, The Conjuring.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, there weren't like any corny moments. Like it was all very, it took itself very seriously, but not in a pretentious way. It was a very enjoyable movie. Well, no. That's, yeah.
Well, I don't know, Mark. Do you have a counterpart from your list to play off that?
Yeah. Sorry for the silence there. I was just thinking about what would happen if Busta Rhymes from Halloween Resurrection battled the jerky person from The Conjuring.
You mean that demon, the possession side thing, or the clapper? Yeah. Or the clapper from the armoire.
The clapper. See, I have a feeling because my next pick is when Busta Rhymes spin kicks Michael Myers in Halloween Resurrection. But I just have this visual in my head of him and his team going in. They're doing their little internet thing, filming everything. And this little jerk starts clapping around the house. I have a feeling that Busta Rhymes would spin kick it.
You know, can we just talk about Busta Rhymes spin kicking here? Like, it's not like that was a 20-year-old actor. Busta was probably like 40, even when he did this scene. And now I'm in my 30s now, and I did martial arts for 25 years. I can still crack out a spin kick, but if I don't warm up, which I'm not going to do if Mike Myers just comes out from around a corner, I'm going to pull something and not be able to walk right for a week. Like, he just straight out pulled out a spin kick. That better take out Mike Myers in one hit or he's done. Because we all know that Mike Myers can walk faster than anybody can run.
And I'm watching this GIF on my page now, and it's pretty much entrancing. But basically,
it looks like Capoeira.
Busta, he starts channeling Bruce Lee, and he does this spin kick. But Michael Myers doesn't move an inch. He just sits there and takes the shot full on. It's kind of worrying me about Michael Myers' defensive techniques.
You know, I wonder if that spin kick was even in the script. Like, I wonder if Busta was just so in the scene. Like, he was I'm going to add a spin kick.
I got a random story, though. When I was younger, my brother was older than me. And one time he jumped on me and was kind of, you know, giving me a pretty good thumping. And I started doing this weird thing with my face where I was going, and he stopped. I stopped. And we just sort of looked at each other for a little bit. And I think he forgot why he was beating up on me. And we just kind of went our separate ways. So I feel like the attack from Busta Rhymes makes a lot of sense. Because Michael Myers, in the history of Michael Myers, has never been spun kick. So he's probably waiting for this guy to just really cower down or run. But instead, he does wah and kicks him in the face.
That's right. It's like the Terminator. It's like system overload. He's not running. What do I do? Am I supposed to just stab him while he's looking at me calmly? I can't do that.
I got to get rid of this GIF, guys, because I just keep watching it over and over.
I'm watching it right now. You know, it actually reminds me of Jason Takes Manhattan, Friday the 13th, Part 8, when there's the boxer. Right. And the boxer is boxing the crap out of Jason. And if you only saw that scene and you didn't understand the dynamics of horror movies, you would swear to God Jason was going to go down. His arms were down. He wasn't defending himself. Like the official would have called it. And then Jason just winds up when the guy can barely lift his arms anymore. Jason just punches him once and knocks his head clean off. Great. If you haven't seen Jason Takes Manhattan, which is Part 8, that scene alone is reason to go rent it right now.
I love that. I watched that moment over and over too, because I mean, how hard is that punch? Because there's tendons, there's the spine, there's skin, there's veins. And it all just went,
you know, Jason lifts. Wait, who can do more curls, Ron Burgundy or Jason?
It's not about the number of curls. It's just explosive power, and just that's Jason, explosive.
I think Ron Burgundy would win against Jason in curls. Really do.
Ron Burgundy is more CrossFit, and Jason is more World's Strongest Man. Ron Burgundy has that functional strength to curl 5 pounds 1,000 times.
Yeah, I don't think Jason could do a push-up. I think he would just lay, like, if he tried to get him to do a push-up, he would just lay straight on his face.
Like, he'd push his body up with his modeled face.
Hey y'all, it's Mark, and for you, the listeners of Movies, Films, and Flicks, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, there's a book that I really recommend to you guys, and since we've been talking about horror films tonight, it's a book called Shock Value: How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror. It's a wonderful book. It's about 9 hours long, but it walks you through how Alien, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, how the classics were made, Rosemary's Baby. And if you're a fan of horror, if you're a cinephile, and if you're just a fan of classic cinema, I totally recommend Shock Value. It's a wonderful book by Jason Zinnemann. Totally recommend it. So, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook.
Okay. So, my next one, we're back to 2012 now. Cabin in the Woods. Now, that movie had a lot of great moments that was given nods to other movies, but the part I like most was not a nod to any one movie at a time, but like 50. And that's when you have the board, when all the technical staff are at the board placing bets on what malady is going to kill the kids in this cabin in the woods. And we have everything from alien beast to angry molesting tree from Evil Dead to Kevin, which I presume, Mark, is from the movie We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yeah, I mean that's a deep cut right there.
We have the sugar plum fairy that makes me think of Almost Are You Afraid of the Dark.
The Deadites were in there from Army of Darkness.
Right. There was witches, and then there was sexy witches. I mean, this was just a glorious scene, and I felt like it was half of everybody's horror profile on Twitter after this movie came out.
Wait, you know what's been killing me lately? I was thinking about in our first podcast when you came up with the cast of The Craft, and we had Imogen Poots, Addison Timlin, the one, what's her name, from True Detective. Who was the fourth one?
I don't remember.
Oh.
I don't remember. I don't remember now.
All right. So, listeners, message me. That's not creepy.
Yeah. This podcast is live, so we'll get an answer to you soon. I'm not going to Google it or anything.
So, I have a question, John. On that board, I know you've really studied it and you wrote your thesis for your doctorate about it. I was wondering, on that board, was Morgan Freeman's eyebrows from Dreamcatcher on there?
I think the guy taking the bets is standing right in front of that, and that's why you don't see it. It's probably right below Wendigo Yeti.
Because for mine, let's see, what is my 2003? 2003 is Morgan Freeman's eyebrows from Dreamcatcher, and this movie is full of guys farting poop monsters. And the only thing I can remember is when I first see Morgan Freeman's eyebrows.
To be fair, his eyebrows are pretty epic looking. It looks like he's got regular eyebrows on and someone just glued on like some Q-tips to like the ends of his eyebrows.
No. I know what's going on here. I know exactly. Because remember Star Trek Next Generation? They did a whole lot with a really small budget, but whenever they introduce a new race, they just give them one subtle difference from a human.
Yeah.
This is like, it's like instead of being a Vulcan, he's got this kind of squared off hairdo and those big eyebrows.
Now, let's say you work for Morgan Freeman and he's giving you orders. Could you focus on the orders or would you just be looking at his eyebrows nodding the whole time?
I would have my head down. I'd be like, just looking up like every 3 seconds, like, I'll get right on it.
It would be like that scene in Austin Powers where you just can't focus on anything but the mole on the person's mole.
You want some guacamole?
I'll be like, whatever you say, Morgan Freeman, whatever you say.
Okay, no, so honestly, his eyebrows reminds me of like the wings of a small, fluffy bird. Yeah, that's what it looks
makes
like.
I think more of a mischievous badger from Talladega Nights.
I feel like if he furrowed his brows hard enough, he could like take off like using the wings on his face.
If he furrowed his brow hard enough, he'd make like the rift in Pacific Rim, and kaiju would come out of it.
But it's true though, like. Dreamcatcher's full of a guy farting and then something blows out of his butt. And I didn't remember any of that. All I remembered were eyebrows. So that's why he made my list.
Amazing.
So, and as you're counting up from 2000, I'm actually counting back from present day. I'm now back, winding back to 2011 to the hands down best Final Destination movie, part 5. And guys, the gymnastics death.
Oh my gosh.
That was amazing. Death. I mean, that was so elaborate. I mean, those movies do a great job of keeping us guessing with all these false positives and few moments. But I mean, this one caught me way off guard. And after this horrifying, disfiguring death that we have pictured in the website where her legs are on top of her shoulders and her femur is popping out of her leg, like her finger twitches. And the finger twitch alone just, I mean, that made the scene for me. That's all I needed was the finger twitch. I mean, that movie was glorious.
I absolutely. And I remember I watched this movie at a drive-in, and the crowd just went insane. And I could almost feel the joy that the creators had in that scene. I could just feel them, almost the directors almost patting themselves on the back from this moment, because it was just a beautifully conceived, it made up for all the, not all the bad kills, because there was a lot of bad kills, but it made up, it just brought back the series and actually made me interested again, which shouldn't happen in the fifth entry of a series. But I love that gymnastics death. That it was quick, brutal, fun. It's what it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, parts one through three were all individually very good at their death scenes. It's just that part four was soul-crushingly uninnovative. I mean, it was just uninspired, nothing. It was dribble. And then this came out of nowhere, and I think it was the best.
Yeah,
I think that's why, too, because it happened after four. So everybody was like, ugh. Like a classic movie happens, the sequel has a hard time living up to expectations. So this came out after four, and it just blew me away. I loved every second. It was perfect drive-in horror midnight madness watching.
This was the Steven Spielberg quality Final Destination movie right here.
Wow. Man,
but, so these gymnasts, this one actually had really dull hair. Did you notice that in the picture? Like, they either have a most perfectly tied back tight bun that's all shiny, or they have like one of those little pompadour hairdos, like with the faux hawk.
Yeah.
But she had no style, so she had to go.
You know, I think the best part about this picture is the expression on her, well, now dead face. It's like, it's one of regret. It's like, I should have just gone.
That she didn't go with the faux hawk.
No, regret that she should have just went into archery instead of gymnastics. No, although that probably would have resulted in even worse death, considering it's a Final Destination universe.
I would love to see the death that death, I guess, had in store for an archer.
Oh, man. They haven't done that in any of the Final Destination movies, have they?
I don't think so.
Final Destination 8. Legolas.
To search for Spock.
So you really John Stockton'd me an assist there, Levengood, and I really appreciate that with the hair. Because the next moment on my list is the interrogation scene between Parker Posey and Ryan Reynolds in Blade Trinity. Now, I know a lot of people look down on this movie, but I absolutely love it. It is just random, weird. It pinballs all over the place, but Parker Posey is the best part of this film. I mean, she's this yuppie bloodsucker. She talks about lake trouts. She has wonderful pompadour hair. The opening of this scene, she walks in and knees a shirtless Ryan Reynolds right in the balls. And then he calls her a cock-juggling thunder cunt. And it's one of the best insults I've ever heard. But it's just a funny scene between these two actors that have dynamite chemistry. Parker Posey was all in on this role. And I just love her. I just like the very thought of yuppie vampires who have chihuahuas and they're constantly kicking their assistants in the face. Like, it doesn't belong in this film, and that's why I love it.
You know, and can I just add, for me, what I remember most about her before I saw this image that you picked was actually that kind of like Rocky Balboa lip sneer that she has when she's disgusted by something on what I'll call her resting bitch face. Yep. And so like that snarl, though, that she has, that sneer, it almost matches the hair.
Ooh. I mean, she's had millennia to perfect it.
True. She. I also love that movie, by the way. Wasn't there, I don't remember, I might have heard it from you actually, Mark, was that Wesley Snipes was actually really annoyed with Ryan Reynolds, so he's joking around on the set? Yeah. Was that?
Yeah, well, he was in character and he wouldn't talk to Jessica Biel or Ryan Reynolds because he's like, these kids are in here taking my film. And so he was just an absolute handful on set. And so the director, it was one of David Goyer's first big films. He took over from writing, and it was just a very unpleasant. It was just an unpleasant experience for all. I mean, it was not conceived well. Like that scene where Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel break out Blade from prison, and there's thousands of cops, vampires, but all they do is they run outside of a building, they jump into a car, and they drive away, and no one follows them. Like, it's not a well-conceived film, but I love that Parker Posey sucked the scenery, I guess.
Do we really think that Wesley Snipes was so into the character that he was just, you know, concentrating, not talking to them all, you know, off camera? Or was it really that he was preoccupied about his taxes? Wesley Snipes, if you happen to be listening, yeah, right. But if you happen to be listening, love your movies, Undisputed Passenger 57, Demolition Man, I worship you. But, I mean, I pay my taxes and I make 1/100th or 1/1000th or whatever of what you do. So well, I pay my taxes.
If I don't pay my taxes, I'm going to do a role where I have to act in character.
What's your character exactly?
A guy who hasn't paid taxes.
It sounds like a difficult role in America.
All right. So I guess what we'll do now, since we'll just finish up your list, John, and then we'll talk. You guys, if you want to look at the rest of my list when we're done with this, you can head over to the website. But we'll just knock out your list now, John.
I think we should come back to your list when I do a 90s list, and we can keep going with yours.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right, so winding back down to 2011, we're coming from Blade Trinity's 2004 is Grave Encounters. Simple movie, simple DVD cover. They were looking for proof. They found it. Great simple tagline. Another movie that knocked me on my ass. I remember this really eerie scene of the star in a weird greenlit hallway with the camera aimed at himself. And you kind of know when you see that picture before you've even seen the movie that this is somewhere towards the end where almost all hope is lost. And when you get to that scene, you really feel it. I thought the movie was very effective. It didn't go to theaters anywhere except for indie film festivals. Impressed the hell out of me. I don't know, Mark. Did you see Grave Encounters? What'd you think?
You know, you said it right. I watched it and I just felt so drained, and it took all the hope out of me, and the fates were just so miserable for everybody that I just turned it off and I was like, ugh.
Did you watch like three episodes of Seinfeld afterwards to kind of
counteract it? I was just like, ugh.
In the beginning, it was a lot of fun, though. In the beginning, it was really playful.
I walked outside my door. I put my hands up in the sky, and I just went, "What?" No, you know, it was effective. It was well done. It was made on the cheap. It has earned its cult audience, but it just hurt my soul. And I guess that's what it meant to do. And I mean, I liked the acting. I think found footage acting is hard to do. And they tried to escape. It was just a doomed situation. So.
But they did start it off well, because when they were talking to the medium that they hired for the show, the guy was just joking. He says, okay, how about, you know, when I walk in here, you shake the chair just out of sight of the camera, and I'll be like, oh, this is really yeah. important. And so they were having a lot of fun with it. It made me think of The Last Exorcism, actually, the way that they were talking about staging it in a pretty pleasant way. I don't know. Next up, totally opposite of pleasant but still delightful, is when random teenage victim number three gets wood chipped by his own he free bird leaps at Alan Tudyk's little hillbilly character. Alan Tudyk just bends over to pick up a log to wood chip, and the kid dives headfirst in the wood chipper. It's like that movie, A Simple Plan, except it's not that simple. I mean, then he's taking the kid by the legs to try and save him, as if after his head was incinerated, he was going to pull him out and save him.
Oh, man. If you guys haven't watched Tucker and Dale, it is about these two rednecks that go to the woods to fix up an old cabin. They're unintentionally creepy to these college kids, and events happen where the college kids think that these two rednecks are killing them. However, a lot of random acts occur, and the college kids keep dying.
These college kids are just like offing themselves.
Yeah, and there's a line in it where Tucker and Dale are running around, and they're like, "Why are all these college kids killing themselves?"
And they're so lovable, these hillbillies.
And yeah, but that wood chipper scene, though, was just brilliantly staged. It was funny. It was gory. I mean, anytime you laugh about a poor college kid getting destroyed by a wood chipper, it did something right.
Okay, well, winding back to 2009, we're gonna take out the pleasant and just go with six slapstick, off-the-wall Sam Raimi-style horrors from Drag Me to Hell. Alison Lohman at one point makes an animal sacrifice of a kitten. She adopts a kitten just to kill it, right? But she adopts a kitten to sacrifice to the Lamia. And later in the movie, evidently the Lamia wasn't pleased because he possesses some servant boy during a seance, and the servant boy vomits a dead kitten. What gastrointestinal cinematic delight, I mean, Sam Raimi can come up with. He's got gypsies gumming Alison Lohman's face. He's got bile and embalming fluids pouring all over her. And he's got dead cats being vomited at her. And so, I mean, if you like sick stuff, this movie is for you.
I mean, next to Descent, I think Drag Me to Hell was my favorite horror film. It was the first film that my wife and I watched together. It is just pure Sam Raimi bliss. Like, there's just it's just funny. It's just anarchy. Kittens get off. They get vomited. I love this scene too with the goat. I mean, that's just the mommy. Oh man, this is a great pick, man. I was gonna put this on my list, but I saw it and I figured I couldn't do it better.
It should also be mentioned that Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I should also be mentioned this movie was rated PG-13.
Yeah.
Now, I ask you, can any other filmmaker out there make an effective horror movie like this under a PG-13 restriction?
I think they got lucky with that one. I don't know how they pulled that off.
No.
So Mr. Horror Leviathan watching Hellraiser 3 while surfing. Have there been any PG-13 horror films like this?
Actually, you know, Poltergeist was only PG, and that had a guy picking apart his own face. Like, ooh, that was a really creepy, gross scene, and that was only PG. But at the time, Spielberg got the MPAA board, which he wouldn't get away with today, to agree to make it PG because it's revealed after that scene that he was hallucinating. That it wasn't really – so the audience would know, oh, it wasn't really happening to his character. But, I mean, then in part two of Poltergeist, which I think was PG-13, Craig Nelson was that his name, Craig?
Yeah.
The father? Craig Nelson. Oh. He vomits a quadruple amputee demon. Like, he vomits a demon in part two. So there are a lot of weird things happen in some of these movies. But
I've had mornings like that.
Where you vomit a demon.
At best, yeah.
No, you know, what's funny is that the night before in that movie, he drank tequila and swallowed the worm.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, speaking of PG movies, the next film on your list is Martyrs.
Wait, which I don't know if there are enough letters in the alphabet to span the gap in what the rating should have been. I mean, this movie actually made me think of Hellbound Hellraiser 2, where this skinless woman is walking around offing people, but you never saw her get flayed. And this poor girl in this movie, you literally see her get flayed. This is marketed by everyone as a transcendental horror movie. It has a transcendental theme. They do a pretty good job with it, but man, do you wince a lot? You don't just sit there nodding like you're like with a hymnal in your hand. It's not that kind of transcendental.
I am so happy that you told me about this film and the plot. And then, because I watched a trailer and that was almost too much for me. And I get that I get the ending. I can see it has a positive Rotten Tomato score. A lot of people love it, but this looks like some really tough stuff. I had to, like, on the website, I had to put the picture down because that is just brutal.
Yeah, if you're looking at the picture, I recommend not eating for another 3 to 4 hours because it's really graphic. You can see like the muscle tissue and everything. It's just, yeah, they went all out.
I mean, I don't even want to expound on the movie anymore. I mean, you look at this one image and it really tells the story of the intensity that they're conveying with this movie. But just know it's not just blatant torture porn. They really synthesized a story and it's kind of interesting.
The director called it the anti-hostile.
The anti-hostile. Well, it was also more intense than hostile at the same time. And then, you know, we go from this transcendental note to just something that's just deliberately farcical. I think that laugh is because Mark just looked at the GIF I posted for the movie Hatchet. Now Hatchet was intentionally made to be kind of like a snarling farce of every Jason Voorhees, Mike Myers, The Burning, or Sleepaway Camp, or any of these movies where people are getting picked off by a killer. And in this one, he pulls kind of like a King Kong versus T-Rex where he breaks the jaw, except in this case, he's doing it to a plus-size middle-aged woman.
You know what I love about this GIF, though, is that she's in a tracksuit running away. And, I mean, that's great special effects is what I haven't watched Hatchet, but I'm tempted to check it out now.
Watch Hatchet. I mean, it's a little bit bad in that direct-to-DVD way. But while it's bad, it has a lot of good, smart homages that they handle well with the classic horror tropes. It's almost like the movie The Hazing, which was making fun of all those Night of the Demons movies. The Hazing, by the way, another great direct-to-DVD movie from 2004, I think, making fun of Night of the Demons. Absolutely see it if you like those movies.
Now, I'll tell you what. When you watch this GIF, you will notice that they do a very good job with the editing and so he runs up to her. He puts his arm. He puts his hands on the bottom tooth, top tooth, runs around her. They cut. Then he rips her head off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like one seamless scene, right?
I mean, it's ingenious.
I bet you,
you almost have to wonder, do they actually have a cut, or did the actress duck and they put up a dummy in one continuous film reel?
They cut. They had to.
I wonder what's going through like a dentist's head when he's watching this scene. It's like, oh, man, that will kind of make my job
really
a whole lot easier.
She really needs to floss.
Yeah. Like, well, then that leads us to the next picture here. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's right. That's an odd coincidence. So the next one is my 2004 Saw image, where our star, who actually is from the sitcom Becker, that Ted Danson, where he's like a Philadelphia doctor, she plays his receptionist. But she was in Saw, and she was the first surviving victim. And she had this dental dam kind of a – not dental dam. I don't know what to call it.
It looks like
thing that would rip her jaw open, this reverse bear trap.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
I mean, when I saw this, I remember seeing this. And even when I pulled up this image on a Google search, I kind of paused and had the same reaction. And that's that you look at it for two full seconds when you first see it and you don't quite know what you're looking at. And the moment you realize what it is, you freeze and you get chest tingles. Mm-hmm. Like, her eyes tell the story in this image.
Chest tingles. Isn't that also a sign of a heart attack? Or a stroke?
or being mildly aroused.
Yeah. Oh.
Wow. Yeah, I remember... I love the twist on this film. I think it built a world, but the first Saw was the only good one of the bunch.
Well, and James Wan again, so.
Yeah. I mean, this thing looks like Bane's mask mixed with a bear trap mixed with a football helmet.
It does. It looks exactly like that. And so the next image I picked actually had nothing to do with a moment of horror itself at all. And people think when they pull this up, they're just going to think, oh, John just likes Jessica Biel's butt. And I do very much like Jessica Biel's butt. I think that every organism on the planet would. But the thing is that in the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's this scene where this girl in her red short shorts is walking up to the house and they don't know the killers are in it yet. And the scene, it has in the left foreground, it has basically just from her lower back down to her upper thigh. And you just see her butt and her shorts. And yeah. It was framing in the background. You see the house that you know is ominous. You know something bad's going to happen. So I thought this was cool because this has been used in loads and loads and loads of horror movies ever since. They also put it in this Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They also used it in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D, although not as gracefully. They were just gawking at, what's her name, Tanya Raymond's butt. Another lovely butt, by the way. So I just thought this was interesting, though. I mean, it's not distasteful. It's an interesting framing shot. I like it. It's kind of iconic for this kind of hillbilly Texas Chainsaw Massacre horror.
So you like it because it's basically an elegant use of foreshadowing, right?
An elegant use of veal bottoming as well.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. This is probably my favorite picture of the bunch.
This is a random fact, but I fell asleep watching this movie in the theater.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine how that's possible.
I mean, I was watching it, and it just, yeah, I passed out, woke up at the end. I was like, hey, how's the movie? They're like, oh, it was great. I don't know. I don't know, man. I think I love the original so much that watching this one just felt, even though it was gross and shot well and it had that great shot, it just... I wasn't a fan, but
it didn't have that gritty factor that the original had, you know. Just watching the original movie, you felt kind of dirty, like watching it. This one was just like, well, it's a nice movie. So
yeah. So my next three, I think, are actually three of the most interesting. 2002's The Ring. Now, when people think The Ring, they think of the tagline from the trailer. Everyone just kept talking about her face, and you see the first victim's face, and it's horrifying. But I don't know, that image without the loud noises actually wasn't so terrifying when I saw it on a Google search anymore. But when I saw Samoa with her J-horror hair in her face coming towards the TV screen from that well, and then just like an Oculus reaching towards the screen and coming through, and she just plops her wet hands on the floor, that was creepy as hell. Like, if I was in that room, I would have just frozen. She would have came up and touched me, whatever, and killed me, I'm sure. Like, that would have been it for me. She had the Japanese evil girl with the hair in the face thing going on. I'd be defenseless.
So, did you say Samoa? Because I'm really hungry right now.
Oh, no, sorry, Samora. She's probably selling Samoas. She's probably Samoa. Everyone pictures this big Hawaiian lady coming towards the screen. Like she just finished surfing. That's why she's wet.
So who would win in a fight, Samoa or the Oculus mirror?
You know, I think Samoa would go through the mirror's reflection and scare Katie Sackhoff to death. Evil Katie Sackhoff to death. That'd be it.
Like, you know how smug you are if you're protected by an evil mirror? And then all of a sudden this Samoa from the ring climbs through your mirror? Oh, that'd be the worst.
That's it. That's game over. It's game over.
Game over, man. Like, but you know, this is going to sound weird. I don't know if you guys ever thought about this, but watching this movie, it just kind of annoyed me. Like, maybe I'm just speaking from something that could never happen, but I felt like, I don't know, this girl never scared me because I felt like I probably could take her out.
Well, I mean, I don't know how effective a spin kick is on a Japanese girl with the evil hair in the face. I mean, they might Samoa, carrying Samoas and Tagalongs.
I'd be done. I'd be like, she's obviously evil and she's reaching out from the TV, but she's got Samoas.
It could be just me, but I would just turn the TV off. I'm like, oh, well, nope, that's not going to happen.
I'd be like, this looks terrifying, but I've got some milk in the fridge. How bad could this really go down if you've got Samoas?
And like, listen, do you have to get my floor wet with all this water? Seriously.
Seriously. She's like, I brought you some Samoas. You're just like, I can't stay mad at you. Look at that evil punum.
The next scene, they're on the couch together, just watching a show.
And so in this movie, that movie kind of has that freeze, scare you to death kind of thing where you're paralyzed in fear. Whereas 28 Days Later, 2002, it was the polar opposite. 28 Days Later was filled with things where the moment you see it, you don't even take a moment to process what's in front of you. You just book because everything in that movie is fast, and so you need to be fast. It's like, you know, when Samoa is slow, people don't just pick up and run. I'll bet if Samara. If Samara was sprinting at people.
Wait, Samara is her name. You've been saying Samoa this whole time.
Sorry, Samara. But if Samara from the ring was sprinting at people, people would just outrun her. They have longer legs than her. But like, because she walks at them, they're doomed. They stand no chance. 28 Days Later, though. Like, think about it. You wake up in a hospital bed like Cillian Murphy in the beginning of 28 Days Later. Everything's quiet. Nobody's around. You don't know what's wrong with you or the city that's so deserted. Like, did the rapture happen? Did Kirk Cameron and everyone else get taken up to heaven but me? And then all of a sudden, boom, you've got this ravenous walking dead dude on fire running after you. And you book with half your head shaved and in your medical clothes. You just run.
This was an amazing scene. Like, this is probably one of my top five horror films. And this moment just blew me away. I had never seen fast zombies like this. And with the, oh man, I love this movie. This was an incredible scene.
Wasn't this actually, by the way, the first zombie movie where there was a fast zombie and during the chase, it was slow mode for a little bit? The thing that they made fun of in Zombieland and a bunch of other movies. Wasn't this the first movie to do that?
Slow mode? Like the zombie in slow mode?
Like the zombie chasing him in slow motion.
I don't think so. No? I think maybe I'm wrong. I just can't admit that Danny Boyle would make a mistake because I think he's the best. But yeah. You know what I love this scene though is when he's walking, he goes to the church, right? And then there's that thing on the wall that says the end is extremely effing nigh. And then those things wake up from the church and chase him. And then they... They run upstairs to Brendan Gleeson, who's in that riot gear.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is, oh man, it's an iconic. I love this scene, man. Good pick, John.
Okay, and to close, the movie came out in 2000, Ginger Snaps. In the year 2000, and when this movie came out, I had freshly turned 19 years old. And here we have the lovely Catherine Isabel. Well, maybe not as lovely at this moment. Kind of. She's almost fully turned into a werewolf in this movie. This movie uses lycanthropy as a metaphor for the coming of age, basically becoming a woman. And I thought that this scene was really cool. I mean, yeah, it was a little sexualized, or very sexualized. But at the same time, they approached it well. I thought. It was very effective, and I was just the right age when I saw it. It couldn't have been better unless I was, like, I don't know, 15 or 16, I suppose. But and then later in the movie, she's full-on wolf. Yeah. But I thought this was a really cool movie. I don't know. Mark, you saw Ginger Snaps, no?
No, I haven't. I
Oh, no? You haven't seen Ginger Snaps?
No, I consider myself to be a werewolf fan, but for some reason this kind of – I don't know. I think I saw some – I had friends that had DVDs of it, but I never picked up on this film. I need to check it out.
Yeah, so I've never seen
two
either.
Two and three are garbage, but part one is gold.
Okay. I'm going to watch this movie.
I'm going to check it out based on your recommendation, Love and Good.
It's also Ginger Snaps, because it seems that a lot of people have missed this from 15 years ago. It's going to hold up by today's standards. It's just going to come off as an indie movie. But, I mean, really cool movie. Please, please go find this. It's probably on Netflix or something, or you can buy it for $5.
I got to ask you a quick question, John. You said you freshly turned 19?
Because I turned 19 at the beginning of the year, and we know that this 2000 movie was largely produced in 1999. So I had turned 19 right about – so it's like I was just cresting into adulthood as this movie was coming out.
I just felt like I turned 19 as a dirtbag. I was like, oh, yeah, 19.
And, you know, seeing this weird Catherine Isabel scene, this, like, oddly sexualized monster scene, it just takes me back to being 19 again. I hope my girlfriend is listening to this podcast.
Can I tell you something, John? I am amazed at your commitment to doing an Eddie Redmayne impersonation this entire podcast.
Yeah, I was completely fooled.
I mean, the whole time everyone thought I was going to betray Channing Tatum and take the Eagle, right?
You did.
That's a really obscure reference for all the people out there who got it. Nod.
You did this whole list, and the whole time I'm thinking, man, this Eddie Redmayne guy, he knows his horror stuff.
He's really committed.
Although it's weird that no one caught that Samoa thing. Like, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, like, man, why is that Japanese girl named after a Girl Scout cookie? Samoa? Samara?
Okay, well, I'm going to blow your mind here. Now, is it that she's named after the cookie, or is the cookie named after her?
Oh.
You eat it, and 7 days later, you die. Of a food baby, a food coma.
Diabetes.
So it's like the sequel to Bad Milo.
I feel like we had a lot of fun. Are we running over? How are we doing? Or is it time for us to say goodbye to our listeners?
Yeah, it's getting about that time where we have to start wrapping up. As always, to read the article that we just discussed, check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. It's by John Levengood. Also, check out part two of the article by our very own Mark Hoffmeyer. Gentlemen, you guys have any final thoughts?
Yes, John.
It's this voice.
I just want to thank everyone who's listening and to read our blog.
Are you Dr. Evil right now?
Okay. It's Mike Myers being Dr. Evil, doing a Dr. Bane impression.
A Dr. Bane Redmayne.
Yeah, he did an impression three levels deep.
I only do impressions two levels deep at the most.
Okay. Two levels. I think they've heard me talk enough, so I'll just say goodbye and good night, and thanks for listening.
Right. All right.
Game over, man.
Game over. It's game over.
As always, I've mentioned it before, but it's worth mentioning again. Check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. I hear it's a pretty okay website. When you guys
tomorrow, John. Oh, I cut you off, dude. I just got so excited. John has a post coming up tomorrow about the ending fight in Bowfinger, the fake purse ninjas.
That is the best fights of film, part three.
So stop by and read about Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy kicking butt.
Awesome. Well, that does it for this episode of Movies, Films, Flicks. I've been
your host. John, you know what I'm going to keep doing? Before you can wrap off, I'm just going to keep doing it one story after another and be like the Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King.
With five endings or eight endings or whatever?
Oh, no.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, John.
Okay. So can we go now? All right. Moviesfilmsandflicks.com. I've been your host, John, from my co-hosts, John and Mark. We'll see you guys next time.
Later. Bye.
We'll be right back. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark. Go, go, go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.